Triple M Footy lives on Listener, thanks to McDonald's and Ream Hot Water. Triple M rocks the NRL. Breaking news, the big opinions, last minute goss from inside the locker room. If it's NRL news you need, get it right here. For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
Great to welcome Ryan Girdler, Wade Graham, Michael Chemis. Afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey, Tony.
Tony, what an afternoon here. Looking out at Belmore. It's going to be filling up as we get closer to the game. What a place for a game on multicultural round. It's a great stadium. I was here for the Sharks-Bulldogs trial match just a few weeks ago, and it was pretty full then with the excitement. Obviously, the Bulldogs, they're improving every year, and there's always that hope at the start of the season, but we've already had a sample of the drums out there. I'm sure we're going to see a lot more entertainment as the game goes on, but yeah, it's a great venue. This old little bit of nostalgia kicks in, doesn't it, fellas?
Have you never played here, Waiter?
I played here, yeah. I played here in the game. Actually, Josh Reynolds' return, I played here with the crowd. Yeah. And then our...
Which one? He's had a lot of returns. Yeah.
And then another game I played here, ran straight through Jimmy Graham, actually, to set up a try for Michael Good on the inside. So I reminded him of that last time we were here as well.
Yeah, my favourite memory here, I think, might have been sitting up on the hill.
Yeah. It was a couple of years ago, wasn't it, Tom? Yeah, we did the show here and then sat up there. But, you know, you just look at the facilities, like you can just understand that when you go to places like, you know, Bank West and those stadiums, the newer ones, Allianz last night, then you come out here, you can just understand, you know, it's probably not up to the standard that it needs to be. The environment's great, as Wado said. I've had some interesting moments here. I remember there was... In 97, we played a semi-final against the Bulldogs here. Solomon Amono got knocked out, and his mum jumped the fence and came on, and they had to stop the game.
Really?
And we won that game, and there was a... I had a kick from the sideline. I was getting hit in the back with 50-cent coins, which I picked up, by the way.
Of course you did.
And then at the end of the game, there was...
Were they the round ones or the pointy ones at that stage?
They were pointy, yeah. And at the end of the game, we had to wait in the sheds for a couple of hours because we couldn't get out. They wouldn't allow us. Security wouldn't allow us out.
Love it. We're going to get into the suburban ground discussion a little bit later in the show. But just where is this, Michael Chemis? I know this in the City Morning Herald had a kind of rating of grounds. Where did Belmore lie?
Well, unfortunately, not very high. It's why they play once a year, what, maybe twice a year. Look, it's great to come back here, especially with multicultural around. They do it really well. The weather's great, and there'll be a good buzz today, but you can't come every week. You just can't. The fans, they pile in, they park kilometres away. Yeah. I know that ANZ Stadium feels a core stadium, as we call it now, feels a little bit soulless when it's only 15 or 20,000, but yeah, this place is... It's got its purpose, and that's once a year.
Yeah, it will be rocking if there are 15,000 people here, though. That's exactly what...
And I think, Tad, the fact that they bring the Gold Coast here, it's kind of smart. You know, the Gold Coast don't generally have a big away sort of supporter group, so they wouldn't have got too many, you wouldn't imagine, at what's the name of that stadium, at Core? Yeah, it changes names every year.
Well, Desi might drag a few in as well, of
course. You think so?
Against his
From a player's point of view, certainly it's much better to play at a venue like this in front of 15,000 than being at a Core with 15 or 20,000. And the atmosphere and the feeling, Gerds is mentioning, you know, probably don't throw 50-cent coins, but you can feel the intensity of the fans as an opposition player.
And it's a different economy these days.
And you can feel
And $2 coins go much faster and harder.
Hang on, you said something.
That happens in the eastern suburbs, though.
Of course.
Were they not... sharp 50 cent coins. Were they round once upon a time?
Yeah, back in the day.
Oh, I don't remember that.
I don't either.
You're so ageist.
Yeah. When was this? Ages. What year?
Oh, he's talking pounds and pennies.
I only deal in notes, mate.
Of course you do. Roosters 48, South Sydney 6. We're going to get to South Sydney crisis. What crisis? Of course, the grand final rematch, the Panthers far too good, 34-12. A lot coming out of that game, including that brilliant performance from Nathan Cleary. We'll get to there as well. The Warriors... They kept giving Raiders opportunities to do a Melbourne on them, but they hung on and won that game in Christchurch, 18 points to 10. Michael Chambers, what's come out of that in terms of injury, charge sheet from the games thus far in this multicultural round?
Yeah, last night it was interesting. Sam Walker came off the field with that incident there with Jack Wyden. Now, it was deemed a Category 1 concussion, which meant he was ruled out of the game without a concussion test. The Roosters, they did the concussion test after the game, And bizarrely, he passed the concussion test. So it's going to be an interesting one. Because it was a Category 1, he's automatically ruled out for 11 days.
Yeah.
So the Roosters, I spoke to them this morning, they're going to apply for an exemption. They say he wasn't concussed. He passed his HIA, and they want him to play next week against the Panthers on, what is it, Thursday night, Friday night next week. So a big one for the Roosters, considering that Luke Keary missed last week. He'll be due back for that game against the Panthers. So hopefully for the Roosters, they get the all clear. It's a bizarre rule, though, isn't it?
It's interesting on that one, because a cat one is when you stay down or there's obviously forceful contact to the head and you can see it straight away. Now, with that collision, it kind of looked like he just got clipped in the neck and he got up holding his neck. He wasn't dazed at all. Like, he looked like he was filthy that he had to come off in the first place.
Yeah.
It's not like a guy showing signs of concussion. No. And we're all super aware of it now in today's game as players, even as opposition players, and you know, us now watching the game,
yeah.
He didn't look.
He'll play next
week. He didn't look
week.
At one. So
I think there'll be a problem.
This is the example of where you can put in that
application totally.
to come back within the 11 days,
yeah.
And hopefully,
yeah.
You know, if the protocol is followed and he is good to go, we see him next.
Sometimes
week.
You feel like, you know, it's the club wanting to get the best out of the player, regardless of his condition. And sometimes it's just the right way to go. And I think in this instance, everyone's seen the incident last night and speaking to Sam last night and showing how coherent he was. I think, you know, he'll be right for Thursday night. And what a game that's going to be.
Yeah. Well, apart from the injury then, but no, nothing on the charge sheet. Jack White wasn't...
All clear. There were no charges from last night's game. So a lot of players cleared over the weekend on Friday night. I'm sure Thursday night we'll talk about Taylan May. He wasn't charged either, so
he's going to be on the show after that. Of course, if you go face-to-face with Reece Walsh, we'll get to him. Big game last night. The Rabbitohs, the story is with them. We'll get to how good, of course, their opponents were, who in front of 37,500, which is terrific. And they were terrific. But let's go to the Rabbitohs first, because that's what everybody is talking about. Where do they sit? They're 0-3 this season, but what are the 5 wins of the last 17? Or what's the stat around there?
Yeah, well, they're in a hole, right? And a few things for me. The things that got them in the trouble with their footy at the back end of last season in their slide are still prevalent in their footy today. They're making too many errors, and on the back of those errors, they're not defending. They're leaking points, right? So you can't do that at any time of the year, really. If you want to have success in this competition, you need to defend well, and you can't shoot yourself in the foot. You've got to give yourself a chance, and that's by, you know, basically completing your sets and not making fundamental errors. Now, the other thing that's crept in for me is, you know, they've lost a lot of confidence. And you wouldn't say that really normally about this South Sydney side. Mm. And when I say they lost confidence, I think in that area, their defence, that after that first try last night, that off the set piece of the scrum, it was noticeable how quickly some heads dropped. And that was, you could almost tell straight away that there was that feeling in the team like, oh no, here we go again.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest thing that they're going to have to try and regain is that confidence. And they're always going to be confident with the ball because of the team they have. But you can't go out there thinking and backing yourself to score 20 points if you're going to let in 30 a game. And for me, if I was in that team, in that club right now, I'd be trying to shift the mentality to let's go out there and try and, you know, win a game.
Keep it simple.
Let's be happy to keep it nil all.
Get back to basics.
For as long as we can. Like, all that other stuff will come.
Yeah.
But until you can stop the opposition scoring tries and get the hard parts of the game right, all that other stuff is just not there.
The hard thing about having this sort of form early in the season, Tony, is the fact that everyone's really excited. Like all the other teams out there, you have a look at the way they're playing, the majority of them, and they've had a pre-season, they've come in, they can't wait to play their footy, they've come out, they've all burst out of the blocks. The level of the quality we've seen early in the season has been exceptional. It gets better every year, and they've just been left in the blocks. And so everyone's questioning, like, their fitness, everyone's questioning their connection as a group, and that's exactly what Wade spoke about. You know, like, when you're in a side that's not playing with confidence, it's easy to go inward and worry about your own performance. And so they splinter off. And so instead of getting out there and doing whatever the team needs, you start thinking, well, I just need to make sure that, you know, I'm not the headline in the paper about my performance. Do you know what I mean? And it just changes, as Wade said, the whole mentality is everyone's kind of looking after themselves, trying to do their own job, trying to come up with their own solutions, as opposed to really coming together as a group, which what needs to happen, and with their coach and working and everyone being prepared to do whatever it takes, yeah, to have a little bit of success, not even to win games, but just to start moving in the right direction, because they're just on the, they're on the slide.
And I think if you look at it in isolation, just to start, well, they're 0-3 to start the year, right? If you just look at that in isolation, it's not the end of the world, and there's still time for them to turn it around. But unfortunately for them, you just can't look at it in isolation because of what's happened last year, yeah, the stuff that's going on with them off the field. It brings in everything else, and the noise just gets louder and louder, mm-hmm, and louder. So to cut that noise off, they need to just simplify their footy, get back to that shift in mentality. It's like, we're happy. If it's nil or at halftime, they should be happy. Let's go after the hardest parts of the game. Let's do it as a team, and let's fight our way out of this place that we're in.
It's not fun either. No, I mean, not, when you've got a talented roster like that with guys that really like to play footy,
yeah,
stripping it back becomes really difficult.
Michael Chambers, I think it was after the Vegas round on this radio show, you said that South Sydney would be the train wreck story of the year.
Yeah, well, I said the potential train wreck story of the year based on the storyline that the boys just touched on there, and unfortunately it's heading down that path where they're 0-3, and yes, they've lost the teams that probably most people would expect that would be in the top four, but South Sydney are expected to be there as well. They were a team we all thought would challenge for a premiership just 12 months ago, and now they've fallen to this point. The concerning thing for me is that's twice now they've had their backs against the wall in situations where they've had so much noise around the roster, around the team, around Latrell. Last year was when Sam Burgess walked out on the club. They played the Roosters fighting for their season and they didn't show up. This week, their back's against their wall. They're trying to use that to rally themselves, to get the result and turn their season around. And once again, they didn't show up. Now, I'm not going to talk about what happens on the field because the boys are far more qualified than I am to talk about what's happening with their football. But off the field, being in San Diego with them in America in the lead-up and speaking to a lot of the players, the focus was about making sure that they are united, making sure that the outside noise doesn't distract them, because they were a fractured group last year. So the focus this year was to make sure that when that noise came, and it was going to come, mm-hmm, that they weren't going to be distracted and they were going to stay together. Now, that doesn't seem the case. They look like they're, as the boys said, they're all worried about themselves at the moment. They're not playing with confidence and they look scared. They look scared of the ramifications of not producing the goods, and as a result, they're not producing the goods. And now we find ourselves at a point after three rounds where people are starting to say, okay, well, what does this mean for the coach? It's three rounds in, and people are starting to question, but I think they're four from their last 16 or something. So the question will be asked of Jason Demetrio. They play the Bulldogs on Good Friday next week. Imagine they lose that. Imagine they go out next week and they lose to the Bulldogs on Good Friday. You can almost put a red line through Jason Demetrio.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they have been a little bit Chautauqua, haven't they? Been stuck in that starting gate and everybody else has jumped out and they're still sitting there being hit with the whip. The man who is hitting the whip, of course, is, as you say, Jason Demetrio. Let's have a little listen to what he had to say after that loss last night.
You know, the monkey's on our back, and you can see that, you know, in our resolve at times. And, you know, there's some effort there, but it's put into the wrong places. And, like I said, the players, there's only one way out, and that's staying together and fighting for training well next week and getting them back on the horse.
Are you confident, JD, that it can be turned around?
Oh, extremely confident. I'm extremely confident, you know. That's my job. It's on me to you know, guide the boys this week and make sure that we're fighting hard and getting ready to play Good Friday. Simple as that. It's disappointing. It hurts. It's probably the lowest point of my career right now, but I know how we get out of it, and we'll fight, and we'll fight together. You know, I've got a lot of trust in this group. They're a great group. They care about each other, and that's probably our biggest problem at the moment.
Why are you the right man for this moment, this club right now?
Oh, I think I've been with this group for a long time. I understand the group. I'm confident that we're on the same page and we're working together. And like I said, we're just going to turn it around. Got no doubt I'm the man who can do that. But ultimately, that's what I sit here and say. It makes no difference to what people are going to say. Well, the only thing that's going to make difference is get our training right, get our performance right next week, get some results on the board. That's all that's going to change it.
Reedy getting the needle out and going for a little bit of a poke there, which is his job, I guess. Lowest point in his career thus far.
Yeah, well, it's tough. Like, he took over the team just after they were in a grand final, and then the following year, I think, did they make it to a prelim, or they lost in a prelim against Penrith, who went on to win the competition, mm-hmm. Which was that was a grand final rematch that year. So they were going well, but since that moment on, really, well, they were playing well last year, but since then, it's that slide and obviously the fallout with a couple of the decisions that the club made, the Sam Burgess stuff, it's just been pressure building yeah. the whole time. But what he's saying is right. Like, they need to just block out the outside noise. The questions
there's
are going to keep
coming. There's much outside noise, not just about their on-field performances. I mean, with Luttrell as well. They're one yep. of those clubs. They're one of those big clubs yep. that people talk about.
But they've also bring it upon themselves, Tony. Like, the drama this week, it wouldn't have been as intense if Luttrell Mitchell didn't do what he did on Thursday night and swear on this radio network. Like, that is their own doing. And you can say, oh, it's a one person. Well, no. If you're together, then you're creating that yourself. And Luttrell Mitchell, unfortunately, has put his team under unnecessary pressure with what he did. And then I'll ask you, Gerds, because the question will come at some point. Luttrell Mitchell as a fullback, with young Jai Grant playing in New South Wales Cup, how long is Luttrell the fullback of South Sydney?
Look, I've been saying this for a couple of years. When, you know, I watched Luttrell really closely, and, you know, the best fullbacks in our game are the generally the best workers in the team. You know, they're the fittest guys in the team. And you just see even a couple of occasions last night when those little kicks and that go through, you know, some fullbacks just find a way to get there. And unfortunately, that's just not part of Luttrell's game. We know what Luttrell's really good at. You know, he's great at just coming in on the back of shape and creating, you know, the overlap in those situations, throwing that final pass. He's a great ball runner when he wants to be. When he's committed and he comes out and he pushes off the back fence, he knocks blokes over. But there's a lot of little parts to his game that other fullbacks in the competition, the guy that he played against last night, are just exceptional at.
Yep.
And, you know, I've always said, you know, if he wants to be a fullback in the NRL, you know, one of the things that you need to make sure you focus on, especially in the off-season, is getting some kilometres in the legs and making sure you're turning up on absolutely every single play. Now, I don't think his form's been too bad in relation to what he's been out offering with the football. But in some of the terms of, you know, getting back and getting to where he needs to be in defensive positions, I would say there's other fullbacks in the competition that just do a much better job at that. And that's something that, you know, Demetrio is going to have to make a decision on at some point.
I reckon round seven's pivotal. They have a bye, South Sydney. I think the club knows that this is obviously an unacceptable start to the year. And in round seven, I reckon the club will sit back and assess where they're at before making any rash decisions. I think Jason Demetrio has got 3 weeks now to turn this season around and show the club that he can get them out of the hole, as he said last night, because if they go into that period in the bye round doing some soul searching, I don't think it's going to end well for him, especially with the noise has already started about Wayne Bennett coming back to the yeah. to the Rabbitohs. Now, that's not an official noise, but it's going to happen. The guy's off contract and he's looking to coach on. And South Sydney, given what they did under him, you'd imagine that would be something he would look at.
Yeah, we can talk about the positional changes and who comes in, who goes out, what are you going to do to make it different? Like, until they get some resolve in their defence, it doesn't matter where you're playing Luttrell Mitchell. Like, he's not stopping 28 points playing left centre. Right? They need to get some defensive resolve. And that's where confidence and trust in your teammate and turning up for each other, that's what you build your form off. Like, you cannot win or have success in the NRL unless you have good defence. So they can throw everything out the window and spend a whole week, the next 3 weeks, if this is what you're giving Jason Demetrio, they need to shore up their defence because, mate, the moment Dom Young scored in the corner last night yep. to start, you saw all the heads drop and they were just they were treading water from that moment on.
We can just see in that example there, like, you know, that was the edge everyone was thinking that was going to be shored up by Jack Whiten. And then you see them splintering off and a guy like Alex Johnson that's played, you know, 1,000 first grade games just starts shooting in because, again, he's just trying to shut down situations on his own. But, Wado, you know as well as anyone out there that follows the game, defence is attitude. And it's the attitude that's wrong for the Rabbits at the moment.
Is that also because their error rate was ridiculous? It was 11-3, I think, halfway through the second half.
Well, that's where they need to. We talk about simplifying your footy, and Gerge is right. It's the hardest part of the game. Like, so you take Kieran Smith, for example, right? He was one of the greatest game managers we've ever seen, because he knew any time he felt his team was going away from their structure or getting a bit loose, but he'll jump out there and kick it on play three and force his team to do the hardest part of the game, which is kick chase, get down the other end and defend. Earn your field position. Don't try and shift your way out of trouble or feel good about the way you want to play footy because you want to score tries or whatnot. No, you got to earn it, and there's no shortcuts to find your way out of form. You just got to roll up the sleeves and do the hard stuff. And maybe if we just take a few more of those shifts out of their play and just happy to kick on play three, play four, get their kick chase and their field position that way, I think that'll be taking a step in the right direction. But yeah, there's no easy way out of this. And they got to have those hard conversations amongst themselves and commit it a team, because it takes all 17 to do it.
Wait, you mentioned tough conversations. I know it wasn't internally, but Josh Mansour's comments during the week, what do you make of that? Because the conversations I've had with people is this is something that South Sydney tried to address with Jason Demetriou in the off-season, in the internal review that they did, that there was some concerns around his messaging, his communication, especially with some of the fringe players. Is that a concern that someone like Josh Mansour has come out and said what he did, or does that not matter to the people inside those four walls?
Oh, listen, I think everything, like, I love Joshy, I love Sauce, got a good relationship, but you've got to take it with a grain of salt, right? He's not at the club, he's left the club, whether it's on good terms or bad terms, he's allowed to say what he feels. But I think that clarity is key in any organisation, yeah, right? any area, whether it be sport or business. Like, you need clarity from the top down, and the best communicators often get the best reaction because everyone below them knows where they stand. So if that's an issue that they've identified, then for sure it's an area, you know, that they need to clear up. But the tough conversation, you know, it's all well and good for someone to be able to have a tough conversation. As a listener, you've got to be able to take a tough conversation too. Like, you've got to be able to cop that criticism on the chin. Yep. And you might get emotional with it at the start, but you've got to have the maturity about you that when you go away from that and the emotion's out of you, you go, okay, well, I'm going to have a look at myself. I appreciate that tough conversation, and I'm going to, you know, get back to work and try and improve on wherever the coach has told me I need to improve in.
Yeah, management is key these days, and communication's a big part of management. I think in rosters, you've got 30 guys, and at some point, even if you don't need that guy this week, you need to manage that relationship with communication, knowing that at some point you're going to need to bring that guy back in and you need to get the best out of him. I think, you know, communication is definitely underrated, I think, in some areas of management. And if he hasn't got that down, and the fact that, you know, Josh has felt the need to come out and say that he was disappointed with the way that it was handled last year, I would say that there might be some problems. But let's not forget that, you know, Jason Demetriou is still early on in his first grade coaching career, and there's parts of his skill set that he will need to develop. And this might be one of those situations where it kind of comes back to him where, well, if I don't sort this communication issue out that I have, and if I'm not happy to sit in these tough conversations, or I don't know a way to navigate, as Wado said, I don't understand the personalities well enough to navigate my through with communication to get the best out of these players throughout the year, well, that's something I need to work on.
For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
Here at Belmore Oval, New South Wales Cup, Penrith and the Bulldogs, and the NRL this afternoon. 3 o'clock kickoff, Bulldogs taking on Des Hasler's Titans. They, of course, had the bye last week after a less than fruitful opening round against the Dragons. See what they can bring to the table and what is a beautiful afternoon for rugby league right here in Sydney. Okay, the Panthers are too good in that grand final rematch, 34 points to 12. When you talk about too good, the name that pops up immediately is that of Nathan Cleary. Andrew Johns described it as the best game that he has played.
Is that right?
Yep.
Better than the grand final?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, like it was nice to sit back and watch, wasn't it, when a guy's like in that sort of form, and we were talking about it early, you know, to have that sort of touch in round three is just phenomenal, and it just goes back, and I don't want to keep bringing South into it, but, you know, Nathan's probably not the most gifted player in the competition, but he probably works the hardest, and that combined with the skill set that he had makes him the most effective player in the competition, in my opinion, and we just saw that, the way that he just, you know, controlled the game, he's in total control of his game, you know, he likes to defend, he likes to do the more difficult parts of the game, so when, you know, the other parts of running the football and he's kicking that come up, I mean, he's right in his sweet spot. So, yeah, he put on an absolute clinic the other day. He was exceptional over the last couple of years. I guess the only thing for Nathan now is just to get into that, you know, that representative scene and really own a series. You know, he's had some great moments. I think he's probably up to about 12 or 13 Origins now, and he's had some good series wins, and he's had man-of-the-match performances. But I guess one thing that people will say at this point, he hasn't really gone in and been the absolute difference in a series where New South Wales have, like, been behind.
Yep.
You know, he hasn't been able to maybe chase down like he did in that grand final last year. But, yeah, what a player. What a player.
Yeah, I think Joey would have loved the fact that it was just a perfect example. Like, well, two things. It was a perfect example of a halfback going out there and executing a plan. That's the first thing, because you watch him at the start of the game, he'll always drop Isaiah Yeo under, or he'll drop Leota under, or he'll drop his back rower Liam Martin under. And then just in that instance where he set up the Targo try, he knew he had Ezra Mann interested in that drop runner, did the show, did the double show, really created that extra space. It was just, that's Joey, a halfback, watching another halfback set up an opposition defence for 25 minutes and then just pulling the trigger on a play and creating a try. And the other thing too that Joey would have loved, as soon as, because you can have a plan going into a game, right? You can have, okay, we watched the video, this is where we think we're going to exploit some weaknesses in the defence. But as soon as Walsh went off, Cobbo went to the back and they put Piacora, the back rower, into the centre. They went out on that edge and they found Joy. And once you find Joy, like the old saying, you just go back to the well. You go back to the well, and Nathan Cleary just was relentless with that left-hand edge defence. As soon as compromised, went after, he got a couple of points, and to the point where they actually put Stags into the left centre, and they put the other back rower, Brisbane back rower?
Piacora.
No, the other one.
Ricky.
Yeah, Jordan Ricky into the centres on the right-hand side. So where does Nathan Cleary attack? Straight at Jordan Ricky. Toto finds a couple of tries in that left-hand corner. It's just a halfback on top of his game, knowing exactly where every player on his chessboard is at, and then just going after the opposition where he can get them.
Yeah. And it goes to what you said, Gerds, about work ethic. For him to say that he's not a natural ball player, which is just remarkable after seeing what he produced.
And the tempo is something I think this year that he's developed, Wade. Like when he's running those lines across field like that, like, you know, he's not blessed with speed, but he just plays with this tempo that he's been able to change in and out of. I thought, you know, especially this year, his ball playing has been just that little bit better. We saw him, you know, he's breaking out of his own end with different sort of tempo, you know, running and speeding up at the line, throwing a dummy. And he did that exactly what you said the week before against Parramatta. You know, when Simonson was taken off, they put Tuolangi out there, and, you know, everyone's talking about how good Tungo is, and he's an exceptional player, but my God, he's getting some service. He's got some guys looking after him in there, and you see the same with May at the moment. Good time to sign a new contract when, you know, you got the best halfback, you know, in the game, just, you know, feeding you.
That's what they were saying about you, Gerds. McGowie was feeding you all that ball.
Yeah, that's exactly right, mate.
The worry for the NRL. No, sorry, not the NRL, the rest of the NRL competition, the teams in it, is how old is Nathan? He's 26, is he? 25, 26?
Yeah.
I didn't hear his post-match interview, but I heard some of the comments from it, how settled he is off the field. He's obviously got his partner now. He's not interested in going out doing this. So he's just in that real happy period of his career where he's confident in his own game. He's obviously got the runs on the board now, three straight premierships. He's iron off Origin. He's iron off Test footy. And he's completely, you know, just reaching the
peak. In the sweet spot.
He's reaching the peak of his powers. So it's going to be crazy to see his trajectory over the next few years, because you know what it's like when you get to that age. Like, you settle down, maybe a couple of kids or a family, or you're just much more settled in your life. Footy, it just becomes enjoyable and easy. And he's made it look easy for the last 3 years. So if it gets even easier for him, good luck, everyone else.
Michael Chambers, he came off early. Was that just because he deserved a bit of an early mark, or was there anything, any niggles?
Oh, I think there was a little niggle with the hamstring. I spoke to Penrith today to make sure there wasn't anything serious. They say that he will be fine to play the Roosters. There was a little bit of a conspiracy doing the rounds this afternoon because Brad Schneider pulled out of New South Wales Cup at the last minute, but apparently he's got the flu, so it's got nothing to do with Nathan Cleary. Nathan, the Panthers think that he should be okay to play the Roosters.
All right, flip of the coin then to the Broncos. There was no Payne Haas, there was no Adam Reynolds, and after 4.5 minutes, there was no Reece Walsh.
Yeah, I actually thought that they started the game pretty well. They started with plenty of defensive energy, they kicked well, and that's what you need to do when you're missing a couple of your big guns going into the game. You need to, you know, start well so your confidence builds within the game. But then after they lost Walsh, it was like a little bit of a dagger, and then the reshuffle in the back line caused those defensive errors. And once Penrith get a sniff and they get the ascendancy, particularly out there on their home field with their crowd. They just drown oppositions. They just kick you in the corners. Nathan Cleary, their outside backs, they're just relentless with how much pressure they put on you. Like, that's within the game. And then once that scoreboard pressure starts to tick over, I had serious concerns midway through that second half that it could have been an extreme blowout. But, you know, kudos to the Broncos. They found a bit. Selwyn Cobbo looked good, made a couple of breaks. They found a couple of tries to finish the game. But, yeah, it's always hard going up against them, losing those quality players early on.
And this is going to be the test for the Broncos in relation to their depth. Farnworth gone, you know, Flegler gone, Capewell gone. Like, then you take out Haas, Reynolds, Walsh. I mean, there's six or seven guys that you're taking out of that grand final side from last year. And this is what Penrith have just been, you know, extraordinary at, is just, you know, losing key personnel and being able to remain at the top of their game. And still have that hunger to go out there and compete like they do every week. And that's going to be the challenge now for the Broncos. They've lost some key personnel. They're going to have some players now that are going to be on the sideline for extended periods. What is that infrastructure that Kevy has set up there in their pathways and that look like? So it's a time for those development players now to come through. You saw young Madden. These guys are going to get an opportunity now, and we're going to see what the Broncos have been doing up there in relation to other parts of their business for the last couple of years.
I will say, like, no one can replace Rhys Walsh, but having Tristan Saylor up there, who every time he's came into first grade, whether it be in the halves or at the back or in OBs, he's done a phenomenal job. And he is a little bit of a like-for-like player. He's got that touch of class. He's got the kick. Things just happen around him, and he's got the speed. Yeah. So
he's a footy player.
I feel like they're pretty short up there until they get Rhys back, but... You know, Haas and Reynolds are the ones. Long term, if they can't get them back onto the park, particularly after the loss of Flegler and Farnworth, you know, their depth is going to be tested.
The thing that Gerd's touched on, though, the depth and having that that ability to rely on people in your squad. The one thing that Penrith have done over the years is the ability to keep guys and not pay overs. Like, they are not top heavy. Nathan's on good money, but they're not. They haven't got $3 or $4 million players. Now, the hard part for Brisbane, though, is that there's been a little bit of noise around Payne Haas, who's signed a mega deal with the club. Rhys Walsh apparently asking for 1.3, 1.4. Ezra Mams has signed a big money deal. It's going to be hard to have that depth in your squad if you're so top heavy. And we've seen that in the past with Manly, with when they had the Trbojevic brothers and DCE on almost a million each. It's hard to get that depth. So I know they all deserve what they get, and they should chase what they're after, but the hard part about that is it's got to give somewhere else.
Well, Dylan Edwards was on up until recently like $400,000 or $500,000 a year.
Yeah.
You know, winning grand finals and being one of the, you know, most productive fullbacks in the competition. So, yeah, you need to be some of those young guys at the Broncos, if they want to have, you know, success and build like a dynasty, they need to be patient.
Yeah, listen to Triple M, that's Saturday Scrum. I just Rhys Walsh, so he went back to Brisbane in a bus, I don't know, stopped at Yamba maybe, somewhere nice, some fish and chips, beautiful up that way. Didn't fly. That's because there is that injury, the Taylan May collision, which was accidental, but I want to get to that in more detail, and we will speak to Taylan later in the show. What's the latest? There is a fracture in his face.
There is a fracture, yeah. The Broncos don't know how long he'll be out for, but there's a fracture there, which is why he didn't fly back, given the air pressure. It's a blow for them. Like, there's no doubt this is something they've been obviously dreading, the one guy they probably can't replace in that team, given what he does for them. And if he's out for 4 to 6 weeks, we saw an attack. They didn't have anything without Rhys Walsh on the weekend. So I know that it's compounded with the fact that Adam Reynolds isn't there, but it's a huge blow. And if that's 4 to 6 weeks, then unfortunately for the Broncos, it's a tough road ahead.
We're at Belmont Oval. Tony Squires, Ryan Girdler, Wade Graham, Michael Chamis. Just to wrap up on that Panthers win, 34-12 over the Broncos. Rhys Walsh and that injury, we said he's had to catch the bus back. There is a facial fracture after the collision with Taylan May that saw him leave the field after, what, just 4 or 5 minutes. No charges for Taylan May. It was clearly an accident, but there are some. And Kevy on the next day was concerned, obviously, that his player is out for not just the rest of that game, but a few weeks. The referees mentioned when, penalising, duty of care, and Kevy thought there is a responsibility. Now, is there a responsibility on that? Does it matter which part of your body contacts the head of an opponent, even if it is face-to-face in this case?
Yeah, I believe there's got to be some accountability on those edge defenders wedging in. I think they've got to get that right. There's been a little bit of focus on that over the last couple of years. We've seen some warnings go out to some players because it's a part of our game now where we've got, you know, high-profile blokes generally at fullback coming, you know, into the back line and then, you know, a lot of these passes without looking. And we know that it's a contact sport and these guys are putting their body on the line, but there needs to be a duty of care from those edge backs that are coming in like missiles. They need to make sure that their technique's right so that as these guys touch, you know, flick the ball on, which a lot of them do, you know, they're hitting them in the right areas. Like, you can still get a good shot on them and make it uncomfortable for them, but I think the fact that he was so upright, and I know it was an accident, but I still think he needs to be, I thought the penalty was sufficient. I think they probably should have a look at it to make sure that guys know that in future, if you're going to go in and commit like that, you need to get your technique right.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I don't agree 100% with that. Like, if you don't want to go deep into the line, if you don't want to risk that collision as a defender, well, don't go deep into the line and don't run so fast out the back. Other than the defender can just slide off.
Yeah, but you're not expecting to get hit in the head when you go into the line.
It's still a collision sport, like, and accidents are going to happen.
Yeah, but you're meant to be protected, so you can go into the line.
So if I
get hit in the head, hit the body.
So if I come out of the line fast, right,
yep,
and someone takes a step and does his ACL, is that my fault for coming out of the line fast?
Well, you didn't hit him in the head.
Yeah, but it's still a collision sport and accidents are going to happen. Like, if he'd come out and hit him with his arm in his head, then fair enough, he got his technique wrong and you can't make contact with the head that way. But Taylan came out of it almost as bad as Reece did. And I understand your argument. I just don't think you can eliminate all the accidents from the footy.
You can minimise it though.
You can try and minimise it.
You can just tell Taylan next time he goes in to make sure that he's wedging in, that he's bending his back and hitting him in different areas.
That doesn't sit well with me either. Like, the referee telling Taylan how he's...
clubs.
I know you, but like, Jared Sutton actually said to him, mate, your duty of care, you need to bend your back. I don't agree with the referee coaching a player
tackling
out there.
Technique,
yeah, tackling
technique.
Yeah, no,
that's a new one.
It came across the mic, and
yeah, right.
I think the NRL is moving in the right direction, and they're doing all their best to minimise these collisions. You know, unfortunately, and you don't see it too much anymore, but
no, you don't.
Accidents are going to happen in our game. It's a high-speed, high-contact game. I don't know whether we're going to get completely right or completely wrong in it, because it is sport and things happen. But
it's so difficult, isn't it? Because there is so much concentration, quite rightly, on concussion
and
protection
100%.
Of the head of all players. And you know, we don't want to go down the rugby path. The rugby union, you can be, there are players who are red carded who have been carrying the ball and accidentally hit an opponent in the head.
Yeah.
That's not where we want to get.
Well, in the Super League, we saw a head clash similar as, probably wasn't even as bad as the Taylan May Reece Walsh one, and they sent the player off the field. Like, for an accident. Like, yeah. I don't want to get, like, I'm all for protecting the players, particularly around head contact and head collision. But
yep. Didn't Dale Finucane get suspended?
Well, he got suspended for a head
clash
on Stephen Crichton. Well, he came out of the line and they said because he came out so fast, it was careless, right?
But the Matrimonium Committee didn't think this was careless. They thought that that Taylan May tried to adjust and jumped to try and avoid contact, and that it wasn't reckless or careless because he made that last-minute adjustment to avoid the contact, which he inevitably made. So it's interesting, Kevy Walters after the game saying, where's the NRL's duty of care? We've got to protect these players from concussion. They were trying to get Reece Walsh back on the field.
Yeah.
Like, he was on the sideline doing some drills, but he couldn't see out of his eye.
When I was calling the game, I was actually thought, well, they're going to send him back out here.
They wanted to.
And it must be because of just the blurry vision that that they couldn't get him back out there. But to find out post-game that he actually had a fracture, like, they're lucky that he didn't go back out there. Because he goes back out there, we all give him a clap.
That's the point I'm making, Wade. Like, it's easy to say duty of care. Brisbane wouldn't have deliberately sent him out knowing that he was injured. But sometimes things happen in the game where you're unaware or there's accidents happen. And in that case with Brisbane, imagine they sent him out with a fractured cheekbone. We're not going to turn around and say they're negligent. Sometimes people get things wrong.
Yeah, but if he passes protocols, I mean, what else can they think?
Yeah.
They just think it's a cut. I mean, that comes back to the ability of the doctor on hand that then needs to come up with a call and say, hey, there's something a little bit more serious here than what we're thinking. It's not just concussion, he's passed the protocol, but you know, with a gash like that and with the contact made where it was, there's a good chance that there's something, you know, a little bit more wrong with him. So that comes back to, you know, the club, not the NRL's negligence, but the club acknowledging that there could be something further.
It does look interesting. I mean, Jerry Marshall King he looked out when he went off, and you know, he passed his HIA. So you're wondering what the question is. What's the question? Do you want to go back on? Yep, you're passed. Yeah. Well,
and he came back on and smashed the Dragons. The test is pretty hard, to be honest, like the concussion test. Yeah. It is hard. You can't fox it, Maths. Really. You used to be able to fox it probably back in the day, but now I think the NRL and the doctors do a great job. Of course, they side on the err on the side of caution, as they have to.
Yeah.
Like, we were speaking about Sam Walker before, and
what are the questions? Whose name am I spelling backwards?
Apparently, the question for Marshall King was how do you spell Steegan, because he's got a good look at
it. Imprinted on his head.
He spells
Steegan backwards.
Welcome to Tony's Spotting Quiz.
All right, gents, the usual operation here, a variety of sports, a little bit of a theme with being at Belmore. If you might use your names. Well, good work. Thinking ahead already. See?
Chamis.
Skipper.
Beautiful. All right. Here we go. Question one. We are at Belmore, of course. It's one of the homes of Kieran Foran. How many NRL clubs does he play for? Yes, Wade.
You can't think about it. Yeah, you've got to have the answer.
Three, no, it is not three.
Four.
Skipper.
Four.
Chamis.
Yes.
Five. Yeah, baby.
Oh, he played Para.
It was process of elimination. Para, Warriors,
can I get an extra point if I
And the Warriors. I forgot about the Warriors. Yeah.
He played for the Warriors, didn't he?
Yes.
Where was I when
Manly twice. What year did he win a premiership?
Skipper.
Yes, Skipper.
11.
Yes.
Manly.
He's a tricky one. His father is CEO of Air New Zealand. Kieran Florence's father. He was CEO of what huge... Yes.
Woolworths.
Not Coles. No, Chamis. You can only answer once.
Damn it. It's one of those.
Walmart.
Walmart is
correct. Yes.
It was announced this week that the 2032 Brisbane Olympic Games opening ceremony would be held where?
Wade.
Yes, Wade.
Sydney.
I think they offered.
But it's Brisbane and thrown in the towel, aren't they?
Chamis.
Yes.
Suncorp
Stadium.
I thought Brisbane were throwing in the towel and Sydney was going to take over and carry the load.
That's Melbourne. That's the comm game. Something, I don't know.
Well, it's not far off from Brisbane. That may well happen. 4,500 athletes on that little square field, Suncorp. It's going
to
be interesting.
Sorry, I wasn't really listening to the question. I was watching the
football. We'll probably have Magic Round on the week after. The surfs will be great.
Exactly. All right. The Australian F1 Grand Prix is on this weekend. They travel around what Melbourne Lake? Wade. I've never seen three blanker faces like talking to three puppy dogs. Lake, it's the Albert, of course.
Lake Albert.
Indeed. Well, let's play a game of racing car driver.
Heard of Prince Albert, never.
Could you buzz before you
skipper, that kind of sorry, stuff? Yeah. Skipper. I'll retract that.
Let's play racing car driver or New South Wales Cup player. Brock Feeney.
Oh, skipper.
Yes.
He plays the New South Wales Cup. Great player.
No, he's the supercar. Brock Parker.
Wade.
Yes, Wade.
New South Wales Cup.
Yes, he plays for the Eels. Miles Martin.
Wade.
Yes, Wade.
New South Wales Cup.
Well done. George Russell.
Wade.
Yes, Wade.
New South Wales Cup.
No, F1. Oh. He's a Mercedes driver. Tim Zoo question. What is the nickname of the boxer Tim will fight in Vegas?
The nickname?
Yeah.
He's very
Skipper.
Tall.
He's very tall. Yes, Skipper.
Lurch.
I'm going to give you a point for that.
Thank you.
For no apparent reason.
Good.
No, it is, in fact, his name's Sebastian Fandora, but his nickname is the Towering Inferno.
Oh, that's a good one.
You did not know that. And final question. Gay Waterhouse has six runners in what race today?
Wade.
Yes, Wade.
Golden Slipper.
The Golden Slipper is correct. Well played. You are the winner.
King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
Just a few minutes ago, we're talking Wade Graham. We're talking about the HIA test. Can you give us a little bit of specifics what actually goes on when a player is taken down there for that test after getting a head knock?
Yeah, well, you go through a series of questions by your club doctor. But it's important to note that you've already done these questions in this test during the preseason, so you have a baseline. So your doctor knows what your baseline is. So to get back out on the field, you need to achieve your baseline or better, pretty much during the test. So they start off by giving you 10 words. It used to be 5, but it progressed to 10 words. So and they give you those set of words. You repeat the words back to them 3 times in a row. So it could be chair, table, field. Like 10 words like that, and you need to repeat the words back and see how many you can get out of 10. Now, on the third go for myself, my baseline's 10 words. I've got to repeat all 10 words back to them. So someone like our colleague here at Triple M, Aaron Woods, his baseline might be 5 words or 6 words, depending on what sort of day he's having. So, yeah, once you go through that and the doctor's satisfied with where your 10 words are, you go through the normal questions like, where are you, who are playing, who did we play last week, what's the date, what's the like, what's the rough time it is. You go through that, and then there's other things, like you need to repeat the months backwards. Then you go through a set of numbers. You need to repeat the numbers backwards, as I give them to you, Tony. So if I was to go 137, you would go
731.
And then if I was to go 2689.
9862.
Yeah, so you do that, right, and you go all the way up to 6.
Am I good to go back?
You're going good. You're going good. You're going good. And then you go through that, and it goes up to six numbers. Right. You need to repeat backwards. And then to finish, you need to answer those, you need to say those 10 words. So
I'll go back to, the original.
Hang on, waiter. Why are you being a hero in the off-season for and answering all 10 words? Surely you play dumb and say your baseline's lower.
Mate, you talk about welfare of players. And come on, mate. Please. You need to set your baseline.
Woods is the smart one. Woods is pretending he's not getting
five out of 10. Let me ask this,
that's the first time Woods has ever been accused of
this. How many guys have got a head knock, not been concussed, come off and not passed that test? Because that sounds quite difficult to me. I mean, Tony, I don't know what was going to happen if he didn't pass. Chamo was going to have to take over hosting. But I would imagine, like with some guys, they would probably, there's fatigue, their heart rate's up, they're probably not concentrating. They come off and they get 10 words thrown at them, even though they might have got a little bit of a knock, they mightn't be concussed and they mightn't be able to answer the question.
Yeah, well, that's what the baseline's there for. So you do the baseline in normal conditions, and we talk about the game doing the best they can to protect players and recognise symptoms of concussion. And this is one of the steps, and it is a hard test to pass. It is a hard test to fake unless you're Shemus and you do a dodgy baseline in the at the start of the season. But That's for the cat two, right? If you get a cat one, you're out straight away.
Yep.
You need to do the test at the end of the game regardless, and then you need to repeat the test in the following days. And you're not even allowed to start your protocol, return to play protocol, until you pass that test. So it is the cat two gives you an opportunity to go do the test on the sideline or in the shed, sorry. That's why it's 15 minutes minimum you need to rest, because you need the whole 15 minutes to firstly, you know, have a drink of water, get your heart rate down, compose yourself to pass the test.
Yeah.
So you can return to play.
The questions should be harder, really, for halfbacks and anybody who's involved in the captain's challenge.
Yeah. It explains why the club is spending thousands of dollars more on wrist strapping tape every year. Yeah. That's what they're writing down. Those messages aren't from their family.
Yeah, 10 words.
Yeah. Table, chair,
candle, window. Yeah.
What's the capital of Mauritania would have been a much better question, I reckon. We've already covered off on South Sydney and the trouble that that club appears to be in with their 0-3 start to season 2024. What about the team opposite them, the Roosters, 48-6 winners? There was a lot of talk last year about the performance of James Tedesco. From the moment he ran out at Vegas, he looked terrific this year and he looked brilliant again last night. What do you make of his performance?
Yeah, well, he's back, isn't he, with a bang. And all the talk out of the Roosters was that he returned with fire in his belly this preseason. A little bit of a chip on his shoulder, not to prove so much to everyone else, but to prove to himself that he still has what it takes. And you put in the work and you get the rewards. And he certainly started this season, you know, being the James Tedesco that of old and the guy that we know. And It was a great performance from the Roosters, not just last night, but you know, over in Vegas, and they got they probably got found out a little bit against Manly, but they were back to their best last night, and in such a big game for the club. Obviously, Jared's 300th, they will no doubt dive into, but yeah, certainly Teddy's back.
Yeah, I really like the fact that it looks like he really understands his role. I think sometimes with Teddy, you know, he's so competitive, he feels like in a game he needs to get his hands on the football a lot, and sometimes it can be disruptive, I think, for the team trying to attack. Justin Holbrook's come back, and I think, you know, we saw what he'd been able to create with the football at the Titans over the last couple of years. Really good attacking mind, and see Teddy sort of just staying a little bit wider, allowing the halves and the dummy half. I thought Brandon Smith was exceptional last night on the back of the momentum, what was created for him by the forwards. But he's just sitting out the back a little bit more, you know, waiting for his time, still popping up, still pushing forward, but playing off offloads and not always getting that first and second receiver. And I think that's been the difference for the Roosters, the way that they've attacked this year. And Teddy's probably got a little bit more energy because of that. Everyone around him's doing their job. They got outstanding outside five. Those guys just bringing the ball back, setting great, such a good platform for the forwards to go through in the middle. Brandon Smith then with just like focused on running, and he's just like annihilating the middle of teams. And then, you know, Teddy and the Haas been able to put it in the corner. It's a simple sort of game plan, but they're doing it really effectively at the moment. Yeah, they got caught out a little bit last week against Manly, some of those early shifts and that, but last night, you know, they turned up and it was Jared's 300th, and what a great night for the big man and for the club in general.
Yeah. Sam Walker, last year, the story was, of course, he spent a lot of time back in New South Wales Cup, which you're watching here, 12-10, Penrith lead the Bulldogs. He's come back. He was terrific last night. He was, you know, he came off early, as we know, but his foot skills in that solo try were right foot, the left foot, little kick, brilliant.
Yeah, he was. And look, the lessons he learned, we haven't spoken about Lachie Ilias today, but I guess the lessons that Sam Walker learned last year, not only just football-wise, but to deal with the pressure that came with being dropped in that public humiliation. And having spent some time with the Roosters in LA leading up to Vegas, like, Robbo took all that pretty personally. Tedesco, his form, the way that Sam Walker wasn't able to play the way that many people expected. There was criticism that Cooper Cronk was may have been influencing the way that the Roosters played, and it wasn't suitable to what Sam Walker was able to do. And this year, Robbo admitted that he sat down with the players and said, well, how are we going to play? And one thing that I had, boys, was the luxury of sitting in that team meeting room. A lot of it was off the record, but sitting in those game plan, those video sessions with the Roosters and watching how Sam Walker handled himself in that environment. And I would have thought that it would have been Luke Geary dominating that conversation with James Tedesco, but I actually was quite surprised at how much Sam Walker dictated in those meetings, and to the point where Robbo said, okay, we get to this point of the field and then it's up to you, Sam. You take us where we need to go. And it wasn't as structured as I thought it would be from the outside looking in, that the Roosters would do everything methodically. It was up to Sam Walker, and you can see sort of playing with that freedom and confidence that he probably needed, have someone to have the belief in him, and I think he started the year really well.
It's funny, right, because you don't always like to compare players to other players, particularly different eras, but you know, he's got to be the closest player to sort of Alfie that you can get to, right, in the modern game. Just the way he plays, the knack he has, those short little kicks that somehow he always regathers. He's not a conventional halfback, we know that. And that's probably, you know, the growth in their football. They've changed the way they play to adapt to his, you know, unconventional way, because he just takes cues, right? He probably doesn't know what he's doing most of the time unless he sees something in front of him that he likes to look at. But he's got that unconventional halfback in it, and like, I mean that with the greatest respect. Like, I think he's probably the closest halfback to Alfie that we've seen, and we're probably going to get again, because it's just that uncanny knack of those short little kicks and just being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, drinking the same water as Alfie, of course. He's up there, does the same thing. Brandon Smith, Gerds, you mentioned him. He was terrific last night. I also loved the look on his face when he came up on the big screen, bleeding profusely, just grin ear to ear, loving everything.
Yeah, well, I think everyone was on Brandon's back last year. You know, the Roosters with some key positional issues, didn't they have? They new dummy half coming in, a guy had been in a totally different system and learning how to play with him, and a couple of unsettled halves, and Teddy. We spoke about what he was last year, and they just seemed a lot more settled. Had a full preseason together, and Brandon just he's a run for that run first mentality in the modern game. I think is really important. I think that's what Souths are lacking at the moment as well, with Damien Cook just not being able to take advantage of any momentum that's created through the middle. And yeah, the Roosters have just got that. His passing game looks a lot better. He knows who's got to get the ball and when, and we know how courageous he is defensively. So I think he's had an epic start to the year, and he's a big part of why they've been so successful.
Yeah, I think with Brandon, we could probably be a little bit guilty of just assuming he was going to fit right into that system straight away when, you know, and not really with just his football capabilities, but also moving to the Sydney lifestyle. Like,
yeah,
the Melbourne.
Culturally.
If you're in that Melbourne system down there, one, it's a good system, it's a great club, but you're insulated down there from the rest of the NRL. Now, to come up, and we know Brandon's a bit of a character, so yep, he likes to be involved. You know, off the field with you know, the cheekiness and the character that he is, to try and translate that straight into the Sydney culture, it was always going to take an adjustment, because it's just a different beast up here when there's, 10 NRL clubs in the hub of Sydney, and it is different here where people recognise you on the, like walking down in Bondi. He would have been known to everyone down there, which he wouldn't have had in Melbourne. So
yeah, we it's the probably, capital of New Zealand, isn't it, Bondi?
Yeah, we can probably give him that little bit of grace, the adjustment in the lifestyle. But I agree. Like, well, I wasn't in those discussions or part of the Sydney Roosters bubble.
Only a select few get that opportunity.
But yeah, they've certainly seen to have their mojo back, and they're pushing in the right direction. I really feel like it's setting up for them this season. You know, they could go all the way. They've got a lot of things to play for. Joey Manu's potential last season, Jared's last season, Teddy's form's back. You know, they're definitely trending in the right direction.
And Michael Chambers, did you go out to dinner with the big wigs?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I did. I went.
I seen his phone ringing before. Actually, it was quite a dominant figure in the Roosters club.
Really?
Just give me a little. I had a
nice dinner. Yeah, had a nice dinner in Beverly Hills with the Roosters team. They were very nice to invite us out for four or five nights. It was actually a great experience to see what fan. Like, yeah, at the end of the day, I'm a fan. Like, I don't get to experience what you guys have experienced in the game, and to sit on team buses and listen in on team meetings and being part of that. You drink the Kool-Aid a little bit, and you start to think. And I'm sitting there thinking the Roosters are going to win the comp, like, and you don't. You start to buy into Robbo and what he's doing, and you said, give me a jersey. I want to pull on a jersey and run out for the Roosters. It was a great experience, but you can see why they've bounced back the way they were. Like, I could tell, having not spent any time with them before, they were galvanised by the way that things went last year. And we spoke about South Sydney earlier. They didn't have two dissimilar seasons. One started the year poorly, the other one finished the year poorly. And the Roosters, they got confidence out of the finishing the year strong and a belief that they can actually challenge for a title this year.
Last week, Reedy talked to us about Jared Waerea-Hargreaves and about the different human being he is off the field and on the field. You could see that last night. 300 games, just an absolutely enormous mark for any player to get to. Coming up with his kids beforehand and seeing him post-Gladiator hour and a half with his kids, they were great pictures, and he once again just puts it all out there.
Yeah, he's... Like, Jared, over my years, is contemporary of mine. We debuted similar time. He's leaving a year after me. Like, I played my whole career against Jared, and he's always someone you have tremendous respect for, because you know if he's in the opposition, you're walking off that field with bruises. He's an alpha among alphas. And I suppose if you're not in his team and the way he plays, because he plays on the edge, right? He always has played on the edge. It can ruffle a few feathers and it can get you offside. But as a teammate, you know, you just can't help but gravitate towards those guys because they are the protectors, you know. You're putting on your boots on before a game, and you look across the room, and Jared's putting his boots on next to you. He just fills you with confidence because you're going out there with someone who's going to have your back and put it all out there. And to see sort of the maturity he has now at the back end of his career, he was a firebrand at the start of his career, as most people are in those early years. But his maturity, the pitches at the end of the game, with his family, the way he spoke, how grateful he was to be at the Roosters, how grateful he was to have the career that he has and is still having. You know, I can't give enough raps for him, the respect I have for him as a player, as an opposition player, the competitor he is. He was one of my favourite guys to play against.
It should have been his 400th yesterday. He's missed 100 through suspension. So.
I love it. He's brilliant. Look, you don't win a game just because it's a milestone game, but certainly would have contributed to the brilliance of the performance of the Roosters. Their second biggest win ever against South Sydney, their traditional opposition, and it was great work for him. As we look at poor old Reece Walsh, a photograph that you have, looking very, very
Is that on
sore.
The Greyhound?
Yeah, it is.
That on sort the bus?
It's just going past Byron Bay now, so.
Life track.
Why don't you jump out and get some painkillers, mate?
I wanted quickly a question without notice for you, though, Wade. I was reading last week Cam McGuinness describing his time when you were captain at the Sharks. You was the best captain he's played under, because I think the quote was, it wasn't about him, it was about team. What is the leadership model?
Well, everyone's different. I feel like I was lucky to play under some great leaders in my time. Started at Penrith under Petro Sivasiva. Then when I came across to the Sharks, obviously Gowers was the captain my entire career there while I was there, but we had Mickey Ennis come across, who was a captain of his club, Luke Lewis, who was a captain of Penrith when he came across. So I just feel fortunate enough that I got to learn from great guys like that, and certainly... You take whatever you can from there, and you put your own own spin on things. But, yeah, I feel like as a leader, you know, you are always out in front, but it's a real honour because you represent everyone who's behind you, and it's important that you get their involvement, you know what they're about. And I didn't know that Cameron said that until you got me on the spot a bit. Cameron doesn't say a nice word about anyone, so it's rattled me a bit.
Well, plenty of nice words to be said about this man who's had a terrific start to the season and so richly deserved given the bad luck he's had with the injury. I'm, of course, talking about Taylor May. G'day, mate.
Hey, how you going?
Very, very well, thank you. Congratulations. Another great performance and what a win for the team.
Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah, it was a great win, eh? Got a tough game next week, or this week coming, so, yeah, just cheering.
Hey, Taylor, Ryan Girdler, mate. Congratulations for the start of the season, and congratulations on the new deal, brother. Two more years out there at the foot of the mountains. There would have, I'd imagine, been a fair bit of interest for some other organisations. Why was it that you felt like it was best for you to stay at the Panthers?
I think just it's home for me, you know what I mean? It's all I've known, and my family's around here. All my family live around here. And, it's just where I think I'll develop most. And, yeah, the culture here is unmatched, I think. So, yeah, that's why I chose to stay.
Taylor, Michael Chambers here. Mate, I had to ask you about the incident with Reece Walsh on Thursday night. Wado was here earlier saying that he thought it was an accident. It was, you know, wasn't even warranting a penalty in that situation. Just your thoughts when you were penalised at the time. What was going through your head?
Yeah, no, I definitely thought it was an accident. I did try and stop myself from fully, like, committing. And, yeah, I got stitches from that too. And, you know, I texted Walsh after the game to see if he was all right. So he said he was all right and it was a part of the game. And, yeah, I didn't mean anything from it. So, yeah, I didn't think it should have been a penalty. But, yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, I'm in your corner, Taylor, too, mate. Wade here. I grew up in Blacktown. I know how much rugby league means to the community out there. Can you tell us how it feels to be a part of that club right now, the success you have, considering how much joy you bring to the community?
Yeah, like, you know what it's like growing up in Blacktown and here in Mountie. You know, it's family around here. Everyone gets together. You know, everyone's trying to be better around here. And, the culture here is just, it's amazing, and it's something different. And it's just really like cultural around here and really connecting, and the energy's unmatched here. So
mate, it's really good to see how you've started the season. We know with injury last year, now you started a couple of years ago, we got a sneak peek, you came in sort of on the wing. You're playing now in the centres. You look like you've put on a fair bit of weight in the off season. Now, tell us a little bit about how you developed. You came up. What position did you play, and where's your favourite spot, and how do you like to play?
I actually played a few positions growing up. I started off as a hooker, actually, coming through Penrith, the system, and then I started to shoot up, and I was getting a little bit faster, so I thought I'll try a wing because, yeah, obviously hookers, it's hard being in the middle, making all those tackles and that.
Smart decision.
Yeah, I know how hard it is to play hooker. And I was just thinking, oh, I can't do this. I can't keep up with this fitness in the NRL, I was thinking. So, yeah, I made the switch to wing iron. And, yeah, just from there, I don't know, it just felt natural from there. And, yeah, the way I like to play is just sort of like backyard footy. I just play what's in front of me sort of thing. If I see space or I just... Yeah, I just like playing like backyard footy sort of thing, but yeah.
Taylor, I heard when you came into grade, your nickname was Tiny. Do they still call you that, or have you outgrown that nickname?
No, I've actually outgrown that nickname. I'm actually Batman now.
So. Yes, I love it. Yes.
Yeah, no, I think everyone's catching on to my alter ego, eh? So yeah, it's all about Batman.
I love it. So weird that Nathan Cleary told us that he's not a natural ball player, but gee, it must be nice to be around him when he does what he did the other night.
Yeah, I just think you see if you watch his training and see how hard he does work and put in all those hours doing training and video. I'd expect nothing less from him, you know. He's one of a kind, and I have nothing but praises to give that bloke. He's the best at what he does, and it's just the best to play with him.
Taylor, I wanted to ask you, obviously, last year was disappointing, that knee injury in the World Club Challenge. Then the thing with Penrith, though, is they've got so many good good kids coming through, and sometimes you may lose your spot through no fault of your own. And Sania Taruva came in last year, was exceptional. What was going through your head last year when the way things were going with the team and then sitting out for 12 months and not being able to help out?
Yeah, it was tough. But in saying that, Tito's, I look at him as my little brother. We come up through the ranks, so, you know, there was no envious or jealousy there. I was actually happy for him, and I don't know, I just knew things would work out eventually anyways, whether I was playing somewhere else or I don't know, but I was just happy for him, if anything. And yeah, it's a sort of blessing in disguise for me, to, this ACL injury, and yeah, everything's worked out now, so yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, hard work pays off, brother, doesn't it? Yeah, tell us a little. It's multicultural round. Tell us a little bit about the jersey you wore Thursday night. I think Frankie Pulatua had something to do with it, but tell us a little bit about your culture and who you represent every week.
Yeah, it means a lot. I'm half Samoan, and just my mum's Samoan and her family, just representing them, and my grandpa back at home, and he's not with us now, but like his family and, you know, their tribe back at home. It means everything to them. They love it. And, I don't know. It's just amazing. Like, I can't describe the words when we played in that jersey, but the feeling was unreal. And, culture's a massive thing in my family. And, yeah, it's just amazing.
How does it make you feel when you go back home and spend time with those people and the way that they look at you and you inspire them just by the actions that you've put in place over the last couple of years?
Is this my family or...?
Yeah, when you go back home, when you go to Samoa and you hang out with the family and the relatives.
Yeah. Well, I haven't been back there since I was 12, but when I was there, I'm sure if I go back there now, then that'd be stoked, especially after the Samoa World Cup. I know what it meant to them, and just watching videos of them going off and having parades, like, it means everything to them, you know. They're not as fortunate as a country we are, but they make do with what they have, and yeah, it's just crazy.
Taylan, you mentioned family. We know how important that is to you. You've spoken publicly that you wanted to, at some point, play with your brothers in your career. The decision to stay at Penrith, it seems though that's closed, that window's closed for now. How hard was it to make that decision? Because you probably could have got options elsewhere to go maybe and play with your brother Terrell, or maybe bring Tyrone back to Australia.
Yeah, that was very hard. I'd be lying if I said it wasn't. I was in talks with them and a few other clubs, but just the things that worked out wasn't as easy as we thought it was going to be. You know, with the salary cap and all that, like, even just trying to get Tyrone back here, we didn't really realise how hard it was. But yeah, I'm stoked to be here, and I know my brothers, I spoke to him, he's happy for me to stay here, you know what I mean? And just to see what Terrell does now, I'm happy with whatever he's going to do, and yeah, that's that.
So, Batman, what's your go-to activity when you're not playing footy? Is it golf? What does the, you know, what do you do?
I think just coming around, seeing my family, just chilling with them, playing basketball, going for walks, playing chess, just reading, like journaling. I don't know, things that I can do when I'm not, like, just things to take my mind off footy. Or I'm trying to do streaming and that, trying to get into that content stuff. So I want to start learning about that and, you know, try and be an entrepreneur so I can look at my things after footy so I don't have to work like a job that I don't want to be doing. So, yeah, that's what I'm trying to get into now and make the most of it while I can.
Oh, brilliant, mate.
Yeah, that's good.
So good to hear. Hey, lovely to talk to you, mate. Thanks so much for giving your time.
No, thank you. I appreciate it, boys.
See you, buddy.
Catch you, mate.
There is Taylan May.
How good was that? Like, just like the honesty, the humility, the gratitude. Like, even when he was talking about the winger coming in and taking his position, he was just like, you know what? I wasn't even like jealous or envious. I was just happy for him. I was happy for my mate, someone who I came up playing footy with. Like, and he mentioned the word culture there so many times.
Yeah.
Like, that, not just his own culture, but that Penrith culture that they understand what they are to the community out there, and with that becomes the responsibility, the gratitude that they have to be representing them, and that humility. It's just, that was a great interview, man. Yep. He was so honest, and he's doing great things out there. Congratulations on the new deal, mate, and the future's looking bright.
Keep it up.
I love Wado, mate. Yeah, we're from the West. We're from the West. Good on your new deal. You forgot, you left the part out where you left him.
They went
out to the Shire.
They kicked me out, mate. They kicked me out.
Yeah, but you could have retired and gone back there.
You could have.
Gerds,
you could have as well.
For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
We're at Belmore, New South Wales Cup 24-10. The Panthers over the Bulldogs, 26 minutes to play in the second half. Halfbacks, it's been a bit of a difficult time for a few of them. As we know, Lachlan Ilias was dropped. Will he jump back in, do you think?
They were impressed with him yesterday, New South Wales Cup. I think the club will have a chat tomorrow or Monday morning to work out what's happening with Lachie Ilias. But don't be surprised if he comes back in the calculations, Tone.
What about the performance of... we've got the South Sydney. Before that, I do want to talk about Jackson Hastings. We're talking about halfbacks. So he was dropped. Now, apparently, if we believe all the reports, he didn't take it exceedingly well. He left fairly soon. All that was, that was supposed to be a natural course of events. Where are we with that?
Yeah, I felt for Jackson Hastings. I think the reports came out that he stormed out of training or he went home because he was upset. Now, that wasn't the case. The conversation with Adam O'Brien occurred, and Adam O'Brien, and you got to applaud Adam O'Brien because coaches get criticised for not treating players, treating them the same or if you don't treat them differently. And Jackson Hastings, we all know, boys, he's a bit different, Jackson Hastings.
Yep.
And Adam read the situation and decided that it'd be best for someone like him to go home, let it sit with him, let it digest and come back the next day. And Adam, he told Jackson, if you want to go, go. And Jackson went home, came back the next morning and got back into business. Now, it's tough because a lot of people saying, oh, it was Adam Clune last year who did it. Well, no, he played 7 of those 10 games, Jackson Hastings, in the halves for the Knights on that run. And one of those games that he missed, a lot of the team missed as well. They were rested in the last round. So he was a key part of it. So it's a pretty big decision from Adam O'Brien. And I think the decision going forward will be whether he comes back in for Tyson Gamble, whether or not he makes way and the halves there with Jack Cogger and Jackson Hastings. I don't know. Do you think it was the right call too soon, Gerds? Would you have pulled the trigger on Jackson Hastings after two rounds?
I just want to know what colour shirt he was wearing when he apparently stormed out of training, because some of the stuff that we analyse in the game these days is just ridiculous. The guy gets dropped, and the big issue is whether or not he went home, whether or not he went. Let's move on away from that. Everyone handles things differently, and that's up to the coach and the manager
It's pretty damning, Gerds. I understand the fact that it came out that he stormed out of training. For a guy who's been dropped, potentially maybe playing for his career, for that to sit with him, that he stormed out of training, it's pretty damning, right?
But he didn't storm out of training.
But he didn't. No, I know. That's why people have been trying to correct it since.
Well, that's good because, it's definitely, it's a black mark against someone's name if they carry on like that. And I don't think that's fair if that hasn't happened. But
unlike some journalism to sensationalise
isn't it?
Yeah.
Look, I think Jackson's a bit of a, it's hard to get a read on Jackson. They lack a little bit of creativity, I think, digging into the line and getting the best out of Cohen. Unfortunately, I think at that club, they need to play the guys that are going to get the best out of the people that they need to play well every week, and that's basically Kalen Ponga, some of those, they need to get the best, the ball out to Best, Bradman Best, they need to get the ball out to Gagai. I mean, that's what's going to make that team hum along. They need to hold their middles, and if the halves aren't getting the ball where they need to go and given the time and space that's needed for those guys to be at their best, well, then they need to get people in there that are going to do the job. And if Hastings hasn't been doing that, which obviously last week they got a bit of decent ball. I mean, they were beating Golden Point or something, weren't they, by the Cowboys, and they led that game. So, but he's pulled the trigger probably pretty early, but he might have some, some things with Jack Cogger, who he's probably been just waiting and waiting and waiting, thinking he's do the right thing, give the current halves a bit of an opportunity early in the season. But as soon as things aren't going their way, he's going to pull the trigger because he's got a guy that's just come out of a good system that he's probably excited to get into the side. I don't think there's too much more in it than that, Wado.
Yeah, I agree. I just wonder, when the case of this is sometimes less is more, right? We spoke about South maybe having to simplify their mentality heading to a game. And there's no doubt with Jackson Hastings in the team, he's a hands-on halfback. He distributes a lot of the ball even to the big boys. if you put his stats up, I haven't seen his stats, but I'd be surprised when he's playing a game of footy if he doesn't touch it as much as Nathan Cleary or some of the guys who touch the ball the most in the competition. With Newcastle, where I see their strength is, they need to go forward first before going laterally. Like, they have the big boys, they have the Saifidi twins, they have Adam Elliott, they have the back rowers in Frizzell who can go forward. And I feel like Jack Cogger might be able to get out the back of the play, direct a little bit more without feeling the need to get his hands on the ball. And if they can get their big boys rolling forward, well then, without that extra voice of maybe Jackson Hastings there, Kalen Ponga's voice then stands out a little bit more. And if they can create that momentum going forward, well then it gives him more opportunity on the outside. So I just think it's a little bit of the case of Jack Cogger might be a little bit less involved. He might just get the team around the park, kick, be happy to play a lesser role so the team can be a little bit more focused in where they're going.
What do you make of players who fit under the Penrith system and play well? Like Sean O'Sullivan, he did well at Penrith, unfortunately hasn't really kicked on at the Dolphins. Like, do you think it's not true to form what they do at Penrith in that roster? Like, Jack Cogger signed a three-year deal, right? He went over there when they were struggling. They started negotiations and they've brought him over for 3 years. So he's going to be the long-term half there. But do you think it's a fair form guide what they do at a Penrith system?
Well, this is what makes recruitment officers and, you know, making those decisions around your rosters. The good ones are good at what they do for a reason, because there's no doubt playing in a better system, in a better team, who, like that Penrith system at the moment, they're just so confident. There's so much clarity and expectation around what you do. When you wear a Penrith jersey and you come into this system, you play well because we win. That's what we do right now. So there's a level of, like, clarity in that expectation. But you look at someone like Jack Cogger, who's a half. He actually started in Newcastle. He bounced around. There's also a great option of grabbing someone out of that system with that experience who could come and implement the right things. But it doesn't always work out. For years, the bane of Melbourne was, right, if you pull that...
They'd take
a player, they take a reserve grader, say, turn him into a first grader, then you pull him back out and put him in another system. Didn't quite nail the way he did down in Melbourne. But, I like Jack Cogger. I think he'll add Newcastle. I think he'll simplify their play, and hopefully they get the best out of him.
Ryan Girdler, do you remember the three words that Wado gave us for the concussion test?
Yep.
Do you?
Chair, hot dog, and sausage roll.
You can't come back.
Does that mean I've got
you're
a,
out.
I've got a Woodsy's
you're
here.
Out,
I'm out.
Out.
Woodsy, you're in.
Woodsy will join us in a little while.
That's just because we're all
Chambers,
hungry.
Do you remember the three
chair,
words?
Chair, table, and office desk.
Field.
Chair, table, field.
That's the feeling too when you go, field. Oh, I knew that was in the back of my mind. That's the same feeling. When you.
And for those who've been waiting an hour, the capital of Mauritania is Nouagchot. There you go. The Warriors, 18, 10. The Raiders, as ever, they turned up, showed up, they gave it a crack, and the Warriors kept inviting them back in as they did Melbourne the week before, but they hung on to that 18-10 win.
Yeah, they needed that, the Warriors. Yeah. Again, they wouldn't be happy with all parts of their game, particularly at the end. Like, they, a couple of errors there, they really just kept Canberra in it. They just couldn't put them to bed. Particularly how they've started the season. Obviously, led early against the Sharks, 12-0. Couldn't put that one away. Led most of the game against Melbourne. That fantastic Xavier Coates try to snatch the win off them. They needed to get one done, and then they did over there in New Zealand. So they're off the mark, boys.
It was a really good scrap yesterday, Tane. Yeah. I think a lot of people looking forward to that contest. You know, the form of the Raiders, the way they've started the season, and we all know the Warriors, you know, when they were going to run into a little bit of form, are going to be a really tough side to beat this year. And go over there, packed house in Christchurch.
How good was that?
It was so good when they walked out in those traditional jerseys. It was like when Dean Bell was walking down the tunnel for that first game over there at Mount Smart. But, a really good game of footy ensued after that. You got exactly what you expected from the Raiders. They were gritty. They just found a way to actually get in the lead, even though, you kind of felt like the Warriors were in control at stages. The Raiders were ahead on the scoreboard. And then in the second half, you just kind of got the feeling that, like they did against the Sharks, there was a little bit of panic starting to creep into the Warriors football. You know, they were sort of
coming up with, you know, trying to score off big plays and kicks that probably weren't on. And then, yeah, they finally they found a way to break the Raiders down, came up with a really nice try to, I think it was Metcalf, and then Roger started having a real, making an impact. He went to fullback with Tua Pickett going off, and then, yeah, we saw a bit of Roger magic there just to sort of consolidate that scoreline, and then they were brave. They held on defensively, but it was a really good contest and good to see the Warriors off the mark, but take nothing away from the performance of the Raiders.
It was a good moment, that Roger try, wasn't it? Because there's always, not doubt, he's a fantastic athlete, fantastic player, but because he had that stay over in rugby, didn't quite work out, he comes back, he's playing in the centres. How's he going to go in the centres? We're all still waiting to see, but then he got the fullback and then got that ball off the... It was just a bit of loose play offload. Yep. Took on Hudson Young, showed the... made the Young half turn out, just one-on-one, too strong for Hudson Young. And it was sort of a little bit of a moment. Everyone would have... Maybe a small moment in regards to the whole season, but maybe a big moment for Roger going, hang on a minute, I'm back here, I've still got it.
Defensively, you know, Wado, he's been really strong, and I think that's what they're trying to do because Chance has been out. They've played Tua Pickett. It's like, oh, Rogers, they're just trying to customise him to that role of defence in the centres and doesn't get as much ball. But yesterday, and I thought the week before, you know, he started to sort of drift around the field a little bit more. He ran for over 200 metres yesterday, still only played about 25 minutes at fullback. So he's finding ways now, and I think that was the reasoning for not moving him back to fullback to replace Chance when he was injured, was so he finds his feet in the centre position. And we've seen it before, you know, at Origin when Tommy Turbo and the likes, you know, they're playing out of position in the centres, but they've got a licence. And I think we're just seeing Roger now starting to have the confidence. He's getting his fitness back. He's just starting to look for the football, regardless of what positions he's in. And as you said, Wado, when he gets it, he's so hard to stop.
If we're going to take a team to New Zealand, a second team, Christchurch Media got to lift their game, boys.
Why? What happened?
Well, they didn't ask Ricky Stewart about the controversial calls. How do you go into that press conference and not ask Ricky Stewart about controversial calls? He didn't get asked the question. It was left to Elliot Whitehead to answer the question about some of those calls. We could have had another $10,000 fine this week. The game's poorer for that Christchurch Media letting us down.
Absolutely. It was a captain's challenge-a-thon at the back end of the game.
Oh, yeah.
It was terrific.
It was.
The Raiders got two right then, of course, missed out on the third. Right here, 34. Penrith have run away with it now. 10 points to the Bulldogs with 13 minutes to go. Aaron Woods here will join us later. He made his way. The crowd parted. Did you notice the crowd part as he walked through up the stairs?
They don't like him out this way.
Bulldogs legend, isn't he?
They don't like him out this way, I can tell you that much.
I like Michael Ennis. I can see he's down there getting his photos taken.
Oh, they like him. They like him.
So much to like about what is going on this afternoon. The Bulldogs will take on the Titans. As I said, Woodsy will join us in half an hour. Right now, they're mixing up it a little bit. We're going to do a bit of this action.
Believe it or not. Believe it or not.
Gents, you know the operation. I throw an idea at you. You tell me whether you believe it or not and why. Now, this was, you, Michael, did mention this to Gerds earlier in the show, but I'm going to put this at the believe it or not. Believe it or not, Latrell Mitchell's best position is in the centres. Waiter?
I don't believe it. I think if they had another fullback that was better than Latrell Mitchell, I would say for sure bring him in and put him at centre because he can play centre just as good as he can play fullback. So I just think he's that good of a player, that talented of a player, that you just put him where it's going to be best for the team. So until they have a better fullback than him, then he stays a fullback.
Can Jack play fullback?
Jack Whiten?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't seen him play much of fullback lately. Did he start his career as a fullback?
Yeah, played fullback. Yeah. Well, I'm just wondering on what Gerd said earlier about if they need someone who's going to focus on those effort areas. He's that sort of player, isn't he?
Yeah, well, it might get to that stage where they might need to try something different if they can't get the best out. But for me, again, like I already said, my opinion is it's not their attack they need to worry about. It's their defence. They need to get some resilience in that defensive area. They need to turn away opposition's attack, and they need to do the harder parts of the game better. Kick chase, kick the ball, get to the end of the set and play field position.
Yeah, mate?
Yeah, I don't believe it yet. I think there's a conversation at some point. I've seen a little bit of young Jai Grant, the little pocket rocket for South Sydney. I think at some point, if they don't keep winning, then, yeah, perhaps you give Latrell that roving role and he can play in the centre and sort of do what he does best attack-wise, and then you have someone else being there in support for every tackle, doing the effort area, things that Latrell sometimes doesn't do. So I don't think it's time to hit the panic button yet, but I can see if we're asking, if they're still struggling in 3 weeks, I think there's a question that needs to be asked.
Yeah, I don't think Latrell needs to be moved. I think he just needs to work on some of those areas that, you know, he needs to tick some boxes there at the back, and maybe that's going to come with time, with fitness, you know, over the next couple of weeks. He might pick up on those areas. I'm sure he's got someone in there in the coaching staff that's showing him some of those areas, and hopefully he's just doing the work. And once he's doing the work, he'll get the miles in the legs and he'll do what he needs to do. I think he's a fantastic fullback.
All right. Look, I know this happened last week. It was getting old, but I still watch it on loop. Believe it or not, Xavier Coates' match-winning try was the greatest of all time.
Oh, I don't believe it. I think it was a wonderful try, and it was a wonderful effort how he dove from, it was almost like 5 metres out, right, and still managed to get it down. But to make it the best of all time, it's all about context and what's at stake, right? And I remember Brett Morris scored a try against us once at Shark Park. He was up in the air, contested, got pushed out, and somehow managed to reach over, and score the try. So there's been some phenomenal efforts over the years. And that's probably one of the greatest rule changes we've ever made to get rid of the corner post as being out. So, no, I don't believe it.
No, I don't believe it. I think it's the best winger corner post try we've seen. We've seen a lot of them over
finish,
the years.
Yeah,
that individual brilliance on the wing. Yeah, I think that's probably the best of all time. But, yeah, as Wade said, context around game. I know that was to win the game, but, like, big moments in big matches. Yeah, I can't say it's the greatest of all time.
Did you ever do a big dive like that at Kurtz?
No. No, I didn't. The wind would have blown me over the corner. I still go back to GI's try against the Broncos. Like, I don't know how many years that, when he was playing for South Sydney. I mean, stuff like that. Like that, I remember watching that live, and that like blew my mind. And so did the try, you know, the other night by Xavier. But yeah, different athletes produce different moments, and it was a good one. But yeah, it wasn't the top of my list.
Some of those Brett Mullins tries I used to watch on video back in the day.
Yeah,
they were great.
Even like great. Not necessarily the try, but the play, the Michael Morgan play in the 2015 Grand Final to get it up in one hand to go through the defence and to find the flick pass with a felt try. Like, I probably put that ahead of Xavier diving for the corner.
Yeah. All right, believe it or not, Benji Marshall will have to change his coaching philosophy to succeed in the NRL. Oh. Well, this is the alleged coaching philosophy of having a work-life balance.
Yeah, I'll start. I believe it, not because I don't think the way he's doing things is right. Like, Benji's the coach, he's got to find his own style, but he's at the beginning of his coaching career as a head coach. I have no doubt he'll change as a coach over time as he gets more experience. So what we're looking at now is the starting blocks, but by the time he finishes and gets to where he wants to, I think his style will adjust naturally in course as you do when you gain experience.
I think I do believe at some point he might have to consider it, but it's a unique situation with Benji, though, because he's very young for a coach. Most coaches, when they come in, their kids are established, they're in school. Like, he's got a very, very young family.
Yep.
And he's got a different life to what a normal first grade coach would come into. So he's trying to find that balance. He doesn't want to miss out on things, and I respect him for that. He doesn't want to miss out on bedtimes and bath times, whatever it may be that he has to be part of. He wants to be part of it, and I respect Benji for that. Yep. But if they start losing, does it mean he has to miss his kid's bedtime? No, but there's going to be some changes, some tweaks to the way he views that work-life balance, and sometimes work will have to take the priority over family, and like other times, family will take priority. So I think it'll tweak throughout the year based on where they're at.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, you think about Cam Serrato, he's got a young family.
But he's got his kids are a lot older. These kids are in school, all of them.
Yeah, but I mean, look at when Ivan started, you know. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's photos of when Ivan started, you know, carrying Nathan around on his shoulders and the guys in the sheds. I mean, that's just all part of the commitment that he's coaching, right? So, yeah, I think at some point Benji's probably going to get a bit of a shake-up into what he thought he might be able to do and what he actually needs to do, but that's all just comes with, you know, learning the trade.
Yeah, it's easy to forget, though. He's been, you know, he's the only coach in the NRL with just one loss. So, you know.
How many wins has he got?
Let's not talk about that just yet. And believe it or not, Jerome Hughes deserved to be suspended. This is for the push of the referee.
Oh, yeah, that was a difficult one. I would say no. No, because, I mean, I think discretion needs to come in. Like, we've got so many rules that are black and white.
Yeah.
But I think with that one, you know when players are taking the you-know-what. And he certainly was. And he was making his best effort there, not to use the ref as a shepherd, to actually make the play. And, yeah, I think that was a little bit harsh. And I think every one of those situations, if they go, you know, to the judiciary, they need to be, you know, there's no black or white reaction from the panel. It needs to be all taken on the situation that was put in front of him, and I think he was harshly treated. Yeah,
well, because remember, it was the crackdown 2016, I think it was, that Tyson Frizzell basically just touched a referee and he got a week for that.
Yeah.
Happily, we're not in that zone at the moment, Michael.
No, look, play on for me. Jerome Hughes, incidental, move on. At worst, you charge him with a grade one knowing he's going to get a fine. If you want to make a stance and prove a point and puff your chest out and say, look, we're cracking down on this is not acceptable, grade one fine, move on. Like, to suspend him, seriously?
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
I don't agree with it, too. The NRL do send out, the match review committee, they send out a warning. It's called a concerning act. If you are doing something that they think is borderline going the wrong way. So I thought they could have just warned him with a concerning act so that if it did happen in the future, they could have went, well, we did tell him and we had to act on it the second time round. But yeah, I thought it was a little bit harsh.
Michael Chambers, what have you got for us on the male front?
Look, we spoke to Taylan May earlier, but his brother Terrell still off contract at the end of the season. He's playing for about a contract worth about $160,000 at the moment, playing well above that. His manager had a meeting with the Roosters yesterday before the game. They're a little bit off in terms of money in terms of what they think he's worth. Now, he originally had a deal at the Bulldogs worth around $500,000 to $550,000 over a three-year period. It was a pretty good deal for a guy on $150,000 to $180,000. The Roosters have come back with an offer. I think it's mid-fours. The management are pushing for fives. I think the deal will get done with Terrell May at the Roosters, but other clubs are circling. I think the Bulldogs have asked the question again to see where that's at. The Dragons are having a look around, and I think Terrell May, it's the Roosters. The issue with Terrell is he's a bit different to what the Roosters are accustomed to. He comes from out west, he's got a different way of thinking, and the Roosters wanted to make sure that he'll fit in culturally. Now, Trent Robertson had a meeting with Terrell last week to make sure that he feels like that he understands what the Roosters are about and they can understand what he's about as well and find that common ground. So that meeting was rather positive from what I understand, and if they can get to an agreement around the money, he'll stay. But the other clubs are interested because he's been quite good to start the year.
Is anything like his brother Taylan, who we spoke to today, who was just a terrific fella?
Yeah, he's awesome. And, like, he deserves it. He started this season outstanding over there at the Roosters. He looks like he's lost a little bit of weight. He's more experienced now, so he's up to speed with the game a bit more, and he brings that offload, which really the Roosters don't traditionally play with a lot of second phase, but he's been a great start and he would be great for the Bulldogs, so no wonder there's some interest in him.
And Lindsay Collins as well, boys, he'll extend with the Roosters as well, who's signed, I think, to the end of 2028. So with Jared Warrior Hargraves calling it a day, if you lock up him, you've got Spencer there for 2 or 3 years, and then you get Terrell May, their front row stocks are pretty much locked up.
The Dragon supporter has basically got a lot of heart monitors on them at the moment. First week, brilliant. I was looking for grand final tickets. Last week, not so happy at all. What's going on, though? We know that Zach Lomax has mentioned the story has been about that he wants out of that because being pushed to the wing. He was brilliant in the first round. In fact, he may have been one of their better players in the second round as well. Ben Hunt has publicly come out and said that, yes, you know, it's true, Zach is not happy there.
Yeah, I found that bizarre, Waito. I found that bizarre that for a guy who went through what he did last year and understands the scrutiny and pressure that he was under because that became public knowledge. Now, we all know that Zach Lomax wants out. We've reported that his manager has been asking for permission to speak to other clubs. But for the captain of the club to come out and say that, I found that bizarre. Is that just me or did you find that a bit odd?
No, I find that strange too, because I've sort of been in their corner around, well, do we even know? Do we even know about the reporting, or is it just grumblings? Because that's...
Yeah, because you don't like to believe us. Yeah,
I like to hear the player say it, but now apparently a player has confirmed they're not just any player, the captain of the club. So it's interesting that he has come out and said it, because it does make it, you know, a little bit more real. But I don't see the Dragons letting him go at all, but particularly with the start of the season. He wasn't great. No, let me finish. He wasn't great last week, but he started the season well. And the Dragons may consider letting him go down the track, but it has to be in for a deal where they get a bigger benefit out of it, whether it be money or a player exchange that Flano obviously identifies will be more of a benefit to the Dragons than letting Zach go.
Yeah, I found it interesting, Chamo. Like, the headline didn't kind of fit the article. It was like, you know, Hunt says Lomax wants out, and then, you know, the whole, all the quotes coming through the article were about, you know, Benny Hunt saying how happy Zach Lomax was and how well he's playing. I couldn't put two and two together.
Yeah, look, we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago. It's an ego thing with Zach Lomax. I think his nose is out of joint being moved to the wing from the centres. And in both weeks, even though they lost, he was still strong against the Dolphins last week. I think Wade's right. I don't think he'll be released now. The Eels will be desperate to get him right now, but that won't happen. At the end of the year, and I think in the coming weeks, they'll have a conversation. If you want to go at the end of the year and you really feel strongly about it, well, then let's work out a package that's going to suit us. And whether that's, and I'm just throwing names out there, I don't want any headlines that this is actually happening. But for example, there's noise around Nelson Asofa Solomona being a little bit unsettled at Melbourne. I'm sure if the Dragons could get Nelson in a swap deal for Zach Lomax, that would be something they would look at. But if they get someone that isn't up to that standard, well, then there's no benefit for them to do that.
Wait, in a footy club, I mean, it's an interesting environment, obviously. It's eternal adolescence, we know that. What kind of effect does this have? You know, obviously, every year somebody, you know, is moving on, and that's okay. But if somebody is expressing that they don't want to be there, I mean, Ben Hunt had done it at the Dragons, and they've kind of struggled, but he played well. What does it do to the club when people are saying that?
Well, it depends on the situation and, you know, who's going through it. And it really depends on the maturity of the squad and the team that you have around you, right? Because these things happen all the time and regularly. Not that, say, necessarily the players want to leave or that they're coming out publicly, but like players come off contract and are happy to go to market to test their value all the time. And as a player and a teammate, I'm happy for my teammate to do that. And even if you are unhappy at the club and you want to sort your future out elsewhere, like, you're entitled to do that as well. But you need to do it in a respectful way to the team that doesn't affect the harmony, and you need to do it in a way that doesn't affect your ability to prepare and perform on the weekend when we need you, when you're currently still playing for us. I can respect you for your decision of wanting to look elsewhere and sort your future out, but you also got to respect us and our teammates, what we're trying to achieve right now for our club at this moment. So if you can compartmentalize that, like if you can leave those issues at the door when you walk into work and go out there and prepare to play and represent us and to do our best to get the result on the weekend, I'm happy to live with that. But that takes a pretty mature squad to be able to handle that and a mature player to be able to handle that.
Wait, am I the only one, mate? Like, if this is all it is, and he has his nose out of joint because he wants to play in the centres, if I'm a prospective club, is that the guy you want in your team, that someone's going to walk out because he's not happy playing in that position? Like, it's not a real good sales pitch to other clubs. I know teams are desperate, but wouldn't the alarm bells be ringing?
Well, you'd have to say yes, because he's been... It's mine, again, I'm not in that club, but looking from the outside in, it's my understanding he's been moved to benefit the team. Like, we think you can do a better job for the team on the wing, carrying hard at the backfield. You're an aerial threat for us to kick for, and it simplifies your game, and it allows us to get Jack Bird into centres and Moses Sully, who are both good centres as well. It's just, that's the balance for our team right now. And I think if he's putting his own feelings and emotions and ego above that of the team, well, as a prospective club, that would be a little bit of a red flag to me.
Drums beating here, multicultural around Belmore Oval, just under half an hour before kickoff. The Bulldogs taking on the Titans. This is the Saturday Scrum.
Triple M Footy lives on Listener, thanks to McDonald's and Ream Hot Water.